This is Leo Baybue for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio. It is a very special Halloween recording. We're not actually with you live in the studio on November 1st, but pretty fresh stuff here. Michaela Rice, the Minnesota DNR naturalist, is with me in the studio on Halloween.
Your local witch.
The phones are ringing in recognition of you making that claim. Michaela, I don't know if that's in your job title or description.
That's a personal interest of mine.
Got it. We get a little glimpse behind the state employee. That's cool. Well, I think I mentioned to you just a few minutes ago that I was thinking about Halloween as one of those holidays that has a bunch of different animals and even a few plants. They're kind of connected to the whole tradition. We've got those nocturnal animals like bats and owls and ravens and spiders. And spiders can be out in daytime too, I know. But we think of them as kind of the creepy crawlies of the night somewhat. And then the other thing that we, of course, think about is from the plant world, pumpkins. And I really don't know how that comes to pass. Pumpkins in and of themselves aren't very scary and don't seem like they cross between two worlds. But you cut them up a certain way and they're transformed. A community creation of sorts, right?
Yes, using natural material. Way to go.
Yes, and you didn't even need a permit as long as the farmer gave you permission or sold you the pumpkin. What's your thoughts on Halloween and in the natural world?
Well, it's cool that the full moon has been recent as well. Today I was actually enjoying the sunshine, which maybe isn't your typical Halloween thing, so I'm a little off kilter, but it'll get dark soon enough and I'll feel witchy and it'll be all better.
Yes, it gets dark fast because we have just over 10 hours of daylight now as we're heading towards the solstice. The clocks will move back and then we'll have more light in the morning, right? So we're going to have really dark afternoons. It'll be dark by the time, well, it's 4:21 on Tuesday and it'd probably be pretty close to dark at this hour in just, what, another week or so when the clocks go back. Michaela, it's also notable for being the week that we head into that great Minnesota tradition of the deer firearm hunting season. That's certainly a point of change on the calendar in regards to, you know, how people enjoy the outdoors. A lot of more care has to be exercised.
Yeah, so for example, the park, Gooseberry Falls State Park, the north part on the other side of the highway will be closed for all visitors. So if you are going to your local state park, just stop in the front desk and ask where a hunt might be taking place. Not every state park necessarily has a park hunt, but on the North Shore, since we do have a lot of deer and a lot of browsing pressure, we call it, they do allow state park hunts to happen. And we are required to use non-toxic ammo this year, which is a great...
I did not know that.
Yeah, update. So right now it's just in state parks that it's required to use non-toxic ammunition, but hopefully this will get the ball rolling in that department. I'd also like to put out there that, especially at Gooseberry Falls, but other state parks, if you are hunting and you are successful, we're encouraging folks to come to the front desk at Gooseberry Falls specifically to check out a game camera that U of M is providing so that your gut pile can be monitored for a month after. The U of M is collecting data on what we'd call an offal or a gut pile to see which critters are coming. And so they're conducting a formal research project, but they are asking hunters to participate. So go to your U of M Extension website if you're interested in participating, regardless of where you are. I believe they're trying to collect data statewide. I did see some bucks clearly in rut in Duluth. We were, you know, leaving. Now it's dark in the morning and there were two bucks hanging out in the road in my neighborhood as we were leaving, and their necks were so big. I don't really get buck fever, but I kind of understand like the thrill, I guess, or just like I just want to see them again because they were so massive. Their necks, just this huge triangle. Their antlers are obviously in good condition right now.
And is that thickening of the neck? Is that something that happens in a short period of time around the rut?
Yeah, like the month leading up to it, they pack on kind of a lot of fat. Their testosterone goes through the roof, and it's just kind of like swollen muscle almost, okay. like a bodybuilder preparing to go.
I'm wondering, no anabolic steroids involved though?
No, but like molecularly, you know, they're kind of creating.
Analogs, yeah. Yep. Metabolites. Wow. No, I actually have not had much opportunity to witness that, so that's fascinating. I wanted to double back to the state parks on the North Shore and hunting as well at some of the others, Split Rock or Teteguch, do you know?
Yes, I believe both of them okay. have.
And these will be posted, though.
So yes, very
somebody
much
who
posted.
Doesn't get the memo is going to have to walk right by a bunch of
yeah.
Of
there's
posting.
Signs. There's trails that are marked with ribbons.
Okay.
Do not cross.
Great.
So just pay attention. But it is made very obvious where the state park. Hunt is taking place.
Yeah, and obviously even outside of hunting zones, wearing certain appropriate colored clothing is, if not required, extremely recommended.
Yeah, dogs too. I have a little jacket that now I put on. Viewers can't see me, listeners can't see me, but I have a little bit of blaze orange too. It's just kind of a habit I get into in the fall, just to make sure wherever I go, I'm in some orange.
We'll be out trying to bud cap on our own private property, our white pine seedlings. And believe you me, I'll be wearing reflective and orange and bright yellow green clothing everywhere. And it's worth it for the sense of security, if nothing else, even if you think that you've made it clear that you're in a no hunting zone. Not everybody gets the memo.
It's just kind of a safe practice, I think.
Yeah,
like putting bug spray on in the summertime, we just put it on when we're going outside in the fall.
Have you heard from any of your colleagues that are in the DNR Wildlife Division about what they're thinking about the prospects for hunters in, in our region? Because I had read that we've had two consecutive severe winters, Michaela. Just wondering whether that means that there will be maybe fewer antlerless deer taken in our area. Just wondering what you know about that.
Yeah, I know. It seemed like to me when I was looking at regulations that there was less antlerless permits available for the northeast area. But just from what I know, theoretically, after two hard winters, even older bucks may have lost their lives during that. They push it so hard during rut. And then if they're continuing to have a long winter, a lot of exposure, they'll have a die-off too.
Okay.
Not just the young fawns that are trying to make it through their first year recruitment. So yeah, theoretically we would have a bit of a male population decline in the area. I don't know if that shows up the first year hunters can notice it. Of course, most of the rhetoric is really about wolves and deer right now. So the messages kind of get mixed up and hunters want to kind of explain what they're seeing out in the woods. And yeah, most of the conversation is about wolf kills. But when we look at the data, the winter and how much the environment has on even male or female survivability is so much higher. The environment plays such a bigger role than wolves. So I just want to remind people of that. But we'll have to kind of hear from hunters what they're seeing out there. And I think it really is going to depend on the weather, if it's warm or...
Well, it's certainly interesting to compare, to think about the fact that an anecdotal explanation that a die-off is due to wolves can get a lot of currency even when there's no data really strongly supporting it. I can kind of hear you saying that.
Yeah, and now there's like actual propaganda from different user groups going out about how much wolves do kill deer populations, even though the data does not suggest that. So I just want to encourage people to stick with what these trends are saying. And we spend a lot of time and effort and the DNR's perspective to track these populations long term. They're pretty reliable studies.
Right.
I'm not going to go into why.
Right. Well,
but
we're not going to resolve it in one conversation here, but I would note that more than likely that the wolves are taking culling from the least fit individuals in the population too.
Yep, absolutely.
Which is their ecological role in some way.
Yeah, other fall kind of phenology things I've been seeing, I'll just say quickly, seeing some groups of bald eagles, which has been really cool. Adult bald eagles, seeing some younger ones too, but those white faces in the pine trees are just pretty spectacular right now. Some groups of crows and grouse are really coveying up right now in Split Rock. Gosh, they were all over under the spruce in the sun. And then what other bird has been on my mind? I saw the turkey vultures. I think they left maybe last week. There was some groups kind of grouping up, in the trees again. Last week I was seeing some red faces in the pine trees.
Huh.
And
I did want to know whether your area, Gooseberry to Split Rock, whether there are a fair number of established kind of traditional nesting sites for the eagles. Are we going to see them all winter? More likely than not. There will be open water.
Yeah, I do know of a really big nest that someone was reporting last year at Split Rock. I see most of the individuals feeding on the roadkill,
right.
But it's hard to know if that's the same individual coming back. But I do see resident adult bald eagles throughout the whole winter up on 61.
Yeah, we certainly see them in the stretch we call the expressway between Two Harbors and Duluth. There are some primary sites where there have been nests for, it seems like a generation, at least an eagle's generation, if not a human generation. It's been over 10 years that I've been seeing that. And the Birdcast online still tells me that there are a lot of birds in flight overnight, still over 10,000 last night in Lake County, and 1.3 million birds in flight this season over the county. I don't know what that all means. I do know that they've got to be coming to the kind of the conclusion of the big bird migration.
Yeah, the other group of birds I was thinking about are the snow buntings. They are here in number, and they don't really move out of the way when you're driving as quickly as they should. So look out for those groups of birds. I've seen a lot of casualties on the side of the road, unfortunately.
Oh, and they're there in bunches. And
yeah.
Are they there because there's something dead on the road?
No,
or because there's something to lick or eat?
Yeah, they're ground feeders. So they're picking at, I think, like the seeds and grains in the grass on the side of the highway. I'm not sure, but they're in.
And they might flush in the wrong direction and get hit.
Yeah, they wait till you get right on them to flush. So
I have a report. I have the proof on my cell phone, but 18 or more fully grown now turkeys right outside of Two Harbors gallivanting back and forth across the road. They're kind of skillful at not coming out when the traffic is coming, but boy, were they close to the road when I went by, and I was very surprised. And they were all seemingly adult size now. Is that par for the course of what would happen with the young of the year?
Oh, yeah, that could be one group. Maybe it's two or three families, and those are the offspring that have survived till this point. And yeah, they're all, I don't know, flocking up right now, and they spend the winter together. I don't know where they roost. I'm kind of curious if they're going to go kind of disappear in harsh winter, if you're going to see them in the Two Harbors area, if they're going to try to stay warm in some residential areas. But they kind of do what I think the grouse do right now and get into some family groups for protection, for warmth probably.
Okay.
And then they just kind of divvy out resources among their hierarchy, however that pans out.
Yeah. And depending upon where you are, dear listener, you may or may not have had a nice dose, a wallop of snow last night. We got between 4 and 8 inches inland from Lake Superior. Not so much on the shore and in Duluth, I take it then.
No, Michaela. I think we got a dusting under an inch either. Yeah, Gooseberry and even at my apartment in Duluth.
Well, it means we're not far off. You know, once you reach Halloween in these parts, the legendary Halloween storm kind of confirmed in everybody's memory that from here on out, snow is more likely than not with every passing week. Snow tires aren't on my car yet. Lots of reminders that it's time. And this snow may be blown off this week during this week, but we may reach 38 degrees and it will all be gone at my house. But it kind of means that those animals that need to hunker down need to have begun the process of getting in that den or close to it.
Yep, I haven't seen a single squirrel out this whole week on any of my hikes. No chipmunks. The Franklins have been underground for probably a whole month by now at least. But yeah, all the other resident little squirrels and stuff I think are in there. They're a little torpor slumber, so they might wake up, you know, this weekend, or the skunk if it's warm. But I think they're all sleeping right now.
Torpor is a condition for not a true hibernator, that they get back up if the weather's kind of temperate. And I know that I read that for instance, raccoons above 15 degrees, they can get out of that torpor and get going again.
Yep. Maybe we'll go into a little bit of thermo energy and some of these stages, because even the difference between torpor and true hibernation and stuff, they're kind of muddy, but it might help us to talk it out. So that'll be a topic for
Interesting terms. A torpor makes me start thinking that some of the animals are like sleepwalking.
Yeah, they're kind of, it is kind of like that, a very deep sleep, yeah.
So with that, Michaela, that's kind of a short sampling of what's happening out there in the natural world. And what have you got going in your interactions with our North Shore visitors? Just start at the beginning and tell us what you got going.
So I'd like to just quickly talk about my Split Rock Lighthouse. hikes that are going on through the month of November. So there are quite a lot of them, but they take place on Mondays and Fridays. And I'm kind of alternating what the topics are. Typically Mondays at 10 o'clock, I will be doing guided winter hike to Bob's Stairs, which is just this beautiful, not a lot of people know about it, but it goes down to a little cove and it's just a very secluded, nice hike. And then on Fridays, I alternate going up to Day Hill and doing more of a natural history hike or doing a hike focused on tree identification and a little bit of forest ecology. And so if you could look online, the Parks and Trails event calendar for the specific times, since they change a little bit. But yeah, those take place Mondays and Fridays at Split Rock. And we meet at Pebble Beach parking lot for all of those programs. And then for November, I will be at the Two Harbors Public Library. This Friday, I have community creations program from 10 o'clock to 12 o'clock, and families or individuals can come at any time during that time period and make some art. I have some wood chips that we'll be painting, you know, kind of like the size of a small dinner plate, just some lightly sanded wood, and try to paint some different landscapes or things that you like. And then I'll have all my feathers and birch bark as well to create some things. And then on the 17th, another Friday at 11 o'clock, I have my youth library program, and this will be about bears. Bears in the Yard is the program name for that. And then my other community creations, this is for adults only. I'll have extra hot glue guns available and stuff that's a little bit more challenging for younger kiddos
to use. So it's not that it's a mature theme, it's that the equipment requires some care.
Yeah, like, very, you know, I'll have some really small beads and some tools, and, you know, there's only one of me, and so I can't always help. So that's more, a mature audience, and that is Thursday, November 16th. From 2 o'clock to 3:45. And those are all at the library, and those programs are posted at the library as well.
Wow, that's great. And it came to mind, we had a question ourselves when we were listing on our community events calendar some of your recent hikes, your naturalist-led hikes. Michaela, are they rain or shine or snow or shine?
Yes, they are. Yep. Okay. We really only cancel probably for hail and lightning and really, really
let's
icy,
hope for
dangerous.
No lightning. We do get lightning snowstorms, but let's hope that we skip some of those on the days of your hikes. But
yeah.
Okay. Good to know. Thanks, Michaela. And any thoughts for what to look for in November, aside from the fact that there's going to be less and less light and less sunshine?
Well, we get into the vehicle collisions again with the light changing. So I guess that would just be my safety message, and then just walk where you're watching, because it is really slippery. I almost fell this morning. I wasn't quite walking slow enough for the conditions. So
I had a close call in the back alley behind our station. I get what you mean. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have to suddenly become attentive to every step we take. And the clocks will be going back, so there will be a little daylight in the morning, but collisions can happen either end of the day. So mm-hmm. you'll have to be taking extra care at night, I guess, when that happens.
Yeah.
That's what we got. Thanks so much, Michaela. We'll see you on the radio sooner than later.
Sounds great.
Thank you very much, and happy Halloween.
Boo.
That was Michaela Rice, the naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, and this is Leo for Wandering Nature News on KTWH.